Up next, JX assistant producer Maddie Peterson offers a selection of short news features from around our region.
I'm Maddie Peterson. A warning before we begin. This first feature discusses suicide and may not be suitable for all listeners. It runs for just over 4 minutes. Nearly 3 years after a young man died by suicide in Klickitat County Jail in South Central Washington, a new audit finds conditions are better there. That's after county commissioners removed the jail from the sheriff's oversight. Lawyers for the family say their settlement helped spur these changes. KUOW's Amy Radle explains.
Melissa Howdepat has heard anecdotes about the booking process at the Klickitat County Jail in Goldendale in recent years, and they're positive. People describe in-depth screenings checking into their substance use and mental health.
I feel a little bit better about the safety of people in jail now, in this jail.
Ever since her son died by suicide while in fentanyl withdrawal in that jail, Howdepat has campaigned for changes. She takes posters of Ivan to community events. She worked to pass a state law warning young people about the dangers of fentanyl. And she obtained a $2 million settlement with Klickitat County that required jail improvements.
There's a lot of ways that we are still honoring him, and doing this settlement was one of them.
She says when Ivan was arrested for violating probation, multiple relatives told deputies he suffered from addiction and needed to be closely monitored. But jail officials failed to catch signs that he was at risk for suicide. His death and the near-death condition of another woman, both enrolled members of the Yakima Nation, sparked criticism of the jail's leadership, Sheriff Bob Songer and jail supervisor Lauren Culp. County commissioners looked at closing the jail entirely and sending inmates to Oregon. But ultimately, Howdepat says they kept the jail under new leadership.
I was really, really happy with the fact that they took the jail away from the sheriff. Like, that decision was huge to me.
Bill Franz is the new jail administrator. He previously worked for the Washington State Department of Corrections. The audit says the jail's organization and professionalism have improved under his guidance. Franz says his goal is to make the inmates' experience not miserable.
Oftentimes a correctional officer will go to their job and they look for what's wrong instead of looking for what's right and rewarding that.
Franz has installed systems in jail cells to monitor inmates' vital signs and set off an alarm if something changes. He's also planning to build a more private area for intake.
So an officer can do a screening where there won't be a police officer standing over their shoulder, right? Maybe the arresting officer.
He hopes more privacy will help people be as honest as possible about drug use and other safety risks. Franz says he's also increased jail cell inspections. Earlier this year, they found a ligature for hanging in one of them. The inmate has two young daughters and was despairing about his long upcoming prison sentence.
We talked extensively to him about things and came up with strategies for him to play a role that he wants in his children's life.
Franz says they facilitated a visit with the inmate's family before he left. The main concern raised in the audit was a lack of medical oversight. The jail has a physician's assistant who normally visits every other week. Attorney Corinne Sebrin helped negotiate the settlement. She says she wants the county to step up and increase that.
They know that certainly the spirit of the settlement agreement was to get more on-site medical care.
But Administrator France says it's not that simple when local hospitals can't find enough providers either.
Even if I had the money to do it, I don't know that I could find a professional that would fill the role.
Gabe Galanda is an indigenous civil rights attorney in Seattle whose firm represented the Howdepat family. He's glad his lawsuits are bringing changes, but with the fourth highest rate of jail deaths in the nation, Galanda says Washington needs more comprehensive oversight.
At present, and I'm really sad to say this, the primary way for jail reform to be accomplished in this state is through litigation because of the inaction of state lawmakers.
In 2023, a task force recommended new statewide standards for jails, but the sponsor, Senator Rebecca Saldana, told the news site Investigate West that lawmakers have lacked the political will to enact them. Meanwhile, another lawsuit by grieving parents resulted in the closure of the jail in Garfield County, where officials said they couldn't afford the needed improvements. Melissa Howdepat and Administrator Bill France are in agreement that keeping the jail open in Klickitat County has given inmates more community support. I'm Amy Radle reporting.
If you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, call or text 988 for help. Since 2012, Oregon has lost two-thirds of its marine kelp forests, according to the Oregon Kelp Alliance. A Newport-based company is working to help solve the problem with a business model that unites environmental and economic goals. KLCC's Brianna Bowman and Brian Bayhuth have the story.
On the Oregon coast, Nate Parker Jones is a commercial fisher, but he doesn't use a crab pot or even a hook and line. He dives for his catch using an airline from his boat rather than a scuba tank to go after his target, a little creature that looks like a spiky tennis ball called a sea urchin.
I just drop down to the bottom and more or less walk around like I normally would on land, but the conditions can be wild. On a good day of diving, I can see my hand if I reach it out as far as I can away from my face, but just barely. But the surge of the waves crashing against the rocks can move me back and forth up to 10 feet. So you don't know where you're going to end up next.
Parker Jones is the lead commercial diver for the Newport-based Uni Sea Ranch and chief scientist for Oregon Seaweed. Commercial urchin divers are after the roe or eggs inside of an urchin, also known as uni, a delicacy prized in sushi restaurants. A commercial fishery for sea urchins has existed along the Oregon coast for decades. Now collecting these animals from the ocean is also an act of conservation. That's because sea urchins are wreaking havoc on Oregon's kelp forests. Sarah Hamilton is the scientific coordinator for the Oregon Kelp Alliance.
2015 through 2020, we saw this rapid systemic loss of kelp forests up and down the coast. And for the most part, in the places where we've lost them, they have not come back.
Purple urchins are not an invasive species, but a warmer ocean has caused them to move deeper and multiply.
In a report that we published in 2024, we found that across almost all of our kelp forest sites, purple urchin populations had increased. And in some places, they had increased up to like 1,000-fold. And so kelp is urchin's favorite food. And so I kind of liken it to if you have one goat on an acre of pasture, you're probably good to go. But if you have 1,000 goats on an acre of pasture, you don't have pasture anymore. You just have dirt.
One might think that an explosion in sea urchins on the coast would be good news for sea urchin divers, but Hamilton says that's not the case.
The urchins graze the kelp down, and then the kelp doesn't grow back, and the urchins just kind of sit there in a little bit of a hibernation mode for years and years and years.
According to Hamilton, when the urchins hibernate, they basically start devouring their own organs and become withered and useless as sushi. In this context, a company like Uni Sea Ranch straddles the chasm between commerce and habitat restoration. Here to tell us more is my colleague, Brian Bayhuth.
Commercial divers like Uni's Nate Parker Jones remove the emaciated urchins from reefs and bring them back to an onshore facility to fatten them up and then sell them. Brad Bailey is co-owner of the Uni Sea Urchin Ranch and designed the recirculating aquaculture systems that mimic the nutrient cycle of an Oregon reef. The prototype system of tanks and pipes are arranged in a couple cargo containers at the Central Coast Food Web facility on the Aquinnah Bay in Newport.
We use urchins, cucumbers, and dulse for the three species that we have in the system. The urchins eat the algae pellets. The cucumbers then eat the waste from the urchins, and then that waste from the cucumbers feeds the dulse, the red seaweed, in the tank, and that cleans the water up. Cleans it up so well that we never have any ammonia detectable in the system. So when we change the water to collect the wastes for scientific studies, the water going back to the bay is cleaner than the water that we bring in.
Bailey says the facility enables him to systematically refine technical details and demonstrate profitability. The system is a scalable template for an urchin farm that Bailey says will ultimately raise and sell 1 million urchins a year. But for conservationists like Sarah Hamilton, the Uni Sea Ranch and Kelp Alliance are only part of the solution. Efforts to reestablish natural urchin predators like giant sea stars and sea otters have been underway for years with mixed results in Oregon. There's a lot more to learn.
We're already figuring out, like, it's not just which levers, but it's which levers in which places at which intensities. And so there's a whole science and frankly, kind of an art to doing this work that we're just starting to wrap our heads around.
As part of a strategic plan, Uni Sea Ranch divers are first removing urchins from areas where kelp still exists before removing urchins from places where kelp has disappeared. With this strategy, the hope is to maintain and expand existing forest and, by degrees, restore the vital kelp forest ecosystem. In Newport, I'm Brian Behuth.
And I'm Brianna Bowman, reporting.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services investigated Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center following an infection outbreak that authorities say left 16 patients dead. Local prosecutors say they've traced that outbreak to a nurse who they allege swapped patients' pain medication with non-sterile tap water. The Lund Report has obtained the federal investigation. JPR's Justin Higginbottom spoke with Lund Report editor Nick Budnick about new insights from the report.
So you reported on an over 300-page federal investigation into Asante. This investigation found a number of safety lapses at the hospital. What stood out to you when going through this?
I guess what really struck me was that, like all members of the public in the community, we didn't know about this until the news broke, courtesy of, you know, local reporters, that patients and their families were getting called starting in November 2023. What jumped out at me was that co-workers of one particular nurse started reporting suspicions of drug diversion starting in May 2022. That was really striking to me, since it was 18 months before the news actually broke.
Yeah, so employees, according to this report, reported witnessing recurring suspicious behavior of this ICU nurse. What sort of behavior did they report seeing?
One coworker had suspicions about this one particular nurse based on how they were handling drugs, and according to this person, seemed to interpose their body so that the actual administration of one narcotic could not be seen by the coworker. There was times when this person appeared zoned out, slow to respond to situations. Zoned out was a quote, and also seemed to be having trouble staying awake. That's concerning when a nurse needs to be on top of their game, taking care of patients' needs.
Another interesting part of this story, of this report, is that this unnamed ICU nurse received a fit-for-duty evaluation and a drug test. What was the result of that drug test?
Yeah, exactly. There were two fit-for-duty evaluations. One was in December of 2022, sparked by some of these reports. And along with that was this drug test. The drug test, it turned out, did not test the person for fentanyl, which the report notes, they spoke to a legal representative of the Asante who acknowledged, yeah, that test should have included fentanyl.
So Asante and this nurse, they're facing a lot of legal cases right now. The nurse is facing criminal charges. Asante settled with a lot of the patients who have sued the hospital. Do you have any idea how this investigation, this report, might impact these cases?
Well, I suspect that it already has. I suspect that the settlements, you know, would have been informed by this report, which had been in the possession of Asante Health, but not the attorneys. I think this entire case shows the importance of, you know, local reporters that have been tracking both the civil cases and the criminal cases. The reality is, we've asked the hospital numerous times for interviews. They repeatedly decline, citing the litigation. Other hospital systems have not done the same thing. There have been scandals, investigations come out about other health systems, and they will engage with the public. These community hospitals receive incredibly lucrative tax breaks thanks to their nonprofit status. In exchange for that, they vow to meet federal standards and assist their communities. And in this case, the community can't get answers to its questions. And I'm not sure what is happening to lead to that situation.
That was JPR's Justin Higginbottom speaking with Nick Budnick of The Lund Report.
That's it for today's exchange. I'm Mike Green.